97.9 FM and 1360 AM WCHL and UNC School of Media and Journalism present Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examination of issues of overriding importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the Carolina campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, television ratings for the NFL. Our guest, Steve Dittmore, professor of recreation and sport management at the University of Arkansas. Steve, for the season, ratings were down about 8%. For the first round of the playoffs, down about 7%. There have been a lot of speculation, or a lot of trying to figure out why that's the case. So let's start with the first round of the playoffs. One of the big explainers out there is, well, there were a lot of blowouts in the first round, and you're going to have lower ratings when that's the case. Is that a contributing factor?
Yeah, I would think that the quality of the matchups is a factor in whether people tune in or not tune in. You know, it's interesting, in the first round of the playoffs, some of the markets that did very well, some of the DMAs that came in real well, particularly on that Seahawks game, were in the southeast, places that were affected by the weather. Also Portland, Oregon, which had a bunch of snow as well. So weather, I think, probably played a factor in certain markets, maybe either positively or negatively on those ratings. But I do think the quality of the competition definitely has something to do with it. I would anticipate that this weekend's semifinal matchups will draw considerably better. Plus, you have the larger markets of New England and Dallas playing this weekend, along with Atlanta. So you got some larger DMAs coming in.
Okay, so you brought up the Cowboys. Let's go ahead and jump to that. So overall, all teams considered, and for the whole season considered, ratings were down about 8%. And some of the writers have said if it weren't for the Cowboys, it would have been a whole lot worse than that. So it's almost like the Cowboys, and to a lesser degree, the Packers, have saved the league from a worse fate than it has suffered.
I think there's some truth to that. I think big teams, big markets, big brands do draw well, particularly for markets that don't have a local team that they have rooting interest in. And I think you see this in Major League Baseball as well. You know, the Yankees, the Cubs, the Red Sox, the Dodgers, those teams are always going to draw much better than the Phillies and the Tampa Bay Rays or something like that. So I do think having a large market, well-known team that has identifiable players does draw in the casual fan. And, you know, you look at this past weekend, again, you know, you've got teams that just play, you know, smaller markets. I'm trying to think of, you know, the Oakland-Houston game. I mean, that was, you know, that was two smaller markets, two backup quarterbacks essentially playing, and it wasn't a compelling matchup, whereas the Cowboys, they've got many more interesting stories. And I do think that Fox is going to be very pleased with the ratings that the Cowboys draw, and think they're probably going to cheer for them to make it all the way to the Super Bowl, since Fox has the Super Bowl this year.
All right, so let's put you in the shoes of Jerry Jones for just a moment. It's like, hey, you guys, I'm carrying you. You know, my franchise is carrying the league. He's already Jerry Jones. Does this put Jerry Jones in a position of to some degree, dictating to the league, you need me more than I need you right now?
You know, I think that he's fought with the NFL over the years about this very topic, that his brand and the star is the most identifiable mark in the NFL, and that merchandise sales, you know, I mean, back in the 1990s when the Cowboys were wininning three straight championships, the Cowboys merchandise was outselling everybody else, and he was only seeing 1/32nd, or however many teams were in the NFL at the time, you know, a share of the licensing revenue. And so he took the NFL to task on that and was able to negotiate some better financial arrangements for the Cowboys, specifically on merchandise that is sold with their mark on it. And so I do think he has some leverage there. Now, having said that, the recent success of the Cowboys would point in the opposite direction. And so I think the league is probably going to say, well, okay, that's great, Jerry, but we want to see some sort of sustained success out of your franchise here in the coming years before we, you know, revisit this topic.
Yeah, it sort of reminds me of, you know, you talk about negotiating from a position of strength. I don't know if you remember the commercial. Deion Sanders is, quote, negotiating with Jerry Jones. And he says, what do you want, Deion, 15, 20? He says, both.
Yeah.
35. So I think Jones probably, you know, I hate to speak for him, but probably sees himself in a position of strength. But if it's a sustained strength, it makes a difference, right?
Yeah, and I think one of the things that will happen certainly as the NFL goes into next season, the 2017 season, is that they are going to start, they'll probably put the Cowboys on many more of those exclusive window games that the NFL has created. You know, they've got the Thursday night game, they got the Sunday night game, and the Monday night games, which don't have any other competition from other NFL games. And so I think you're going to see a lot more of the Cowboys on those. And in particular, Monday Night Football, because Monday Night Football, it seems like, really drew the short straw this week. They don't have the ability to flex any games to Monday Night, and some of their games were just, frankly, very, very poorly contested.
Yeah, it was the Sunday, Monday, Thursday night games that really took a ratings hit. What's up with that?
You know, I don't know. I mean, one of the things that you can argue is that by creating those three exclusive windows plus a doubleheader game on Sunday, that in effect the league has created too much inventory, that there's too much, and that people have become bored or have reached their tipping point in terms of how much football they can consume. You know, you layer college football into this, which has Thursday night games, Friday night games, Saturday, you can watch 12, 14 straight hours of college football. And, you know, you get into November and the ESPN's got their midweek games on Tuesday and Wednesday nights. And, you know, it may be that we've reached a saturation point on this. You know, now, having said that, I do think that this past year's election cycle did contribute to some of those things. Certainly, that drew some viewers away. There was a lot of discussion about migration toward cord cutting or toward skinny bundles and people dropping cable altogether. And so that might have impacted things, movement of people toward streaming. There's a variety of reasons why that may have occurred on those Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. But it also could go back to our point that we began with, which is the competition. It just may not have been that compelling.
Sports Focus. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking about declining television ratings for the National Football League. We're talking with Steve Ditmore of the University of Arkansas. Steve, toward the end of block one, you touched on a couple of these things. I'd like to get more in depth. And one of them is the election, because the numbers for the NFL were way down, about 14% prior to the election, down only about 1% from the election on to the end of the regular season, making it 8% overall. What about the election do you think might have had something to do with lesser viewership for NFL football?
Well, I think to make a correlation between the election and the NFL is pretty easy to do, but I think it's also not just the NFL, but all television programming, I think, ratings suffered as a result. I do think, you know, I'd like to think, I guess, that it was the desire on the part of the electorate to be informed about issues and make an informed decision about who to vote for in the presidential and local elections. I also think that part of it was that it was kind of like watching reality television in some senses. You never knew what someone was going to say or how people would be characterized and talked about. And so that became more interesting in the moment, perhaps, than watching a rather meaningless mid-October Monday Night Football game between the Jets and the Jaguars or something like that, as an example. You know, and so I think it's a combination of the desire of the public to want to be informed, but also a desire of the public to be curious to know what is going to be said and to be able to watch it in live fashion. I think, you know, I saw something the other day that of the top 50 Nielsen-rated over-the-air broadcast programs in 2016, the only one which was scripted television was an episode of NCIS, which came in the high 40s out of the top 50. Everything else was live programming, meaning sports or award shows in some capacity or debates.
Yeah, I think that's a reason that sports fans don't like the idea of taping the contest and going back and looking at it later, unless you're sort of forced into that, is that I want to see it as it happens. And it seems that the election was covered sort of like a sporting event, and it came across sort of like a sporting event. Do you see that?
Oh, I absolutely did. I mean, it was unfolding, and it was every night needed to tune in to find out what had happened during the day or what was going on that night, if there was a debate or some sort of town hall meeting or something like that. And that's really the most important type of content that broadcasters have, is that live programming. You know, we live in a Netflix world where you can binge watch 10 straight episodes of Gilmore Girls or something like that without leaving your sofa, and you know, you don't need that live element to it. Whereas sports, award shows, news and information is unfolding. And then I think the other thing that contributes to that is the ability of people to comment on second screen. So to engage with people on Twitter or Facebook or other social media feeds and allow them the opportunity to have a conversation with people, either civil or not civil, about different topics that are of interest to them, literally while they're consuming that program.
All right. You mentioned oversaturation, and I do want to get into that into some depth. But the first question along those lines is, because there are so many other things to watch, to do, to be involved with, including the election, has the NFL hurt itself by putting games on the small screen, by having the NFL Network that not a lot of people have access to?
I don't think they've hurt themselves. I think their strategy with the NFL Network really was to grow the distribution of that network, but also give themselves a backup plan should a bid for rights not come in at what the NFL wants. And so it gives them some leverage when negotiating with CBS and NBC and Fox and so forth. For new contracts, it gives them, all right, you're not going to give us what we want. Well, we'll put it on our NFL Network, and then you won't have access to this. And then they'll point back to the ratings chart that says, see, these are all the highest rated programs. This is what you can get for advertising and retransmission fees by having our content on there. And so I think it was a strategic decision on the part of the NFL to do that. I don't think there's any grand plan to have all of their content go to the NFL Network, but they certainly could do something like that. I think their experiment with Twitter was, you know, just that, an experiment. I think you'll see the NFL look at other streaming options, other platforms. You know, you hear things about Amazon or YouTube and some of those others about having NFL games stream on there. I think, you know, getting back to the oversaturation, one of the comments I would say there is I do think that people only have a capacity to consume so much football. And when you start at Labor Day and you go all the way through New Year's with a regular season that has three or four teams that are really good, three or four teams that are really bad, and then, you know, 25 teams that are all pretty mediocre, I think you do run into some problems with people just not being interested in the product.
Sports Focus. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion with Steve Ditmore of the University of Arkansas about ratings in the NFL. Steve, one thing that has, again, been put out there as a possible reason for people tuning out the NFL is anthem protests. Do you think that's legit?
No. I don't. Most national anthems are not even shown on television. And so I just don't see how that argument would hold with why people aren't watching on television has to do with the anthem.
All right. So these writers who are saying this are one of the issues, if you will, is, you know, live TV, you watch what's going to happen. If there are a few who want to see, is a player going to take a knee or several players going to take a knee? They look, they see it happen. It's over. I don't care about the game. So if they are interested in that, that interest is met or satisfied immediately. And then you don't have to watch the game if that is indeed why you're tuning in. All right. You mentioned cord cutting and millennials. What's the issue there?
So, I mean, I think, you know, the basic thing on the cord cutting is pretty straightforward. Households pay upwards of $100 a month for a cable television package or a satellite package that delivers a myriad of channels that nobody ever bothers to watch. And more to the point, people are gravitating toward Hulu, Amazon Video, or Netflix, or some other way to get their content. And so there are different options. And so if households are looking to cut budget, what's an easy one to cut? Well, I'm going to cut my $100 cable package down to something that's like $35 a month and go after something like Sling TV or PlayStation View or any number. DirecTV's got a skinny bundle now, DirecTV Now. So they can go to these things. I mean, it's a way for consumers to pay for the content that they wish to receive and not pay for all the content that they don't consume. It's, you know, in a way, it's kind of like going to a buffet restaurant and you're paying for everything on the buffet, but you're only eating five or six different items. Well, shouldn't you only just pay for those things a la carte? Wouldn't that be more effective? And, you know, you can, the challenge with some of those is the local television networks. And so, you know, like a PlayStation View doesn't carry local TV stations in every market. And so that does require a digital antenna if you're going to get a local station. So there are some hiccups and some problems that go along with it. But I think this generation is growing up with the idea that, hey, I can go to YouTube and watch what I want or go to Netflix and watch what I want.
Yeah. So this is a problem for television in general. And not just for NFL games or the network security, the NFL. And yet that has historically in the past 5 to 10 years been seen as the saving grace of television, live sports. So if live sports are starting to suffer a bit, then I think some television executives are getting very nervous.
I would agree with that, and I think that's why you see some attempts at consolidation in the space. You see kind of an oligopoly forming of major corporations, Comcast, which now owns NBC, the proposed AT&T Time Warner merger as system. You know, AT&T bought DirecTV, so now they own the system, and they're now looking to own content as well through Time Warner. So I think you're seeing a lot more of that on the business side of media as they all jockey for position. You know, you mentioned broadcasters. A lot of these broadcasters are owned by independent corporations, people like Hearst, which recently had a carriage dispute with DirecTV here at the beginning of the year, in which some markets missed out on either their ABC or their NBC affiliate for a few days, but that got resolved. And so you do see a lot of positioning and posturing going on in the space right now.
One thing that Goodell said, the commissioner of the NFL, that I thought was very interesting is that they're looking into commercials and how commercials are placed and how they break the flow of the game and all that kind of stuff. So this is yet another challenge for the bottom line for the broadcasters who are concerned. It's like, if we have a flow going, we sure don't want to break it, because these kids, especially the younger ones, are used to looking at things in fits and starts, right? And if we get them off of that, they might not come back.
Yeah, and I think that is a real concern, and then B, there's an easy fix for that if the NFL wanted to go down this road and it could negotiate with its partners, which is to consider how the World Cup is broadcast. The World Cup doesn't break during the 45 minutes of a given half of a soccer match. They continue to flow, and they have little ads or little corporate logos that rotate on the screen, and the broadcast is just kind of sponsored by those corporations. It's the same as an ad. Maybe it's not the same as a 30-second commercial that features a truck driving over a mountain or something like that, but it does allow some brand exposure through that. And I think that is a possibility for the NFL to consider, and not just the NFL, college football. I mean, if you watch Monday night's college football championship game, good Lord, that thing took a long time to play. And, you know, it just seemed like there were commercial after commercial during that. And I think that, to your point, Charlie, that does break up the flow of a game.
And that does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Steve Dittmore. Thanks also to engineer Gary Kirk. And as always, thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall at the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance, and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a service of UNC School of Media and Journalism.